The following interview features Hamilton-born artist Jan Wade from her home in Vancouver.
Okay, well, my name is Jan Wade. I'm a woman artist of color. I live in Vancouver, but I grew up in Hamilton, Ontario, where I went to a comprehensive arts high school and then went on to the Ontario College of Art and Design, as it was known at the time, in 1972 to 76. At which time I was the only student of color at OCAD, and now I am an artist working in Vancouver. Who knows how much longer, because who can afford to live here, but there you go. I show nationally, internationally, not very much locally, but there you have it.
Okay, I'll follow up with asking where do you think you're going to go from Vancouver, but I want, Liz is, we'll get Liz to introduce herself, who is a current graduate student at OCAD U, but over to you, Liz.
Hi, Dan and everybody. As Andrew said, my name is Liz Akirico, and I am in the graduate program at OCAD U, which is one of the many reasons that I'm really excited to have this conversation with you, Jan, because I know that you have history with OCAD and being an artist from Hamilton. And also, I'm interested too in your history. Like, I know that your family is a mixed family, and your parents had to deal with miscegenation laws in Canada, which I think at some point we'll get into.
Okay.
But maybe first we should start with, what you're doing now.
Yeah. And so maybe, as a first question, which we've asked all the folks, is like how you became an artist and why art, and what art has been for you. I know that's a very open general question, but
I mean, it's pretty easy to answer at this point, because now I realize I was just born an artist no matter what I'd done. And actually, for a number of years I wanted to get married and have children. That is really what I wanted to do. I mean, I always, since about grade 5, I knew I wanted to go to OCAD, because I'd seen a little movie in our art class, and I thought, okay, that's for me. But really, I wanted to get married and have children also, which is something that just never happened in my life. But I was born an artist. It's always been part of me. So even if I'd got married and had children, I would have been making art from diapers and tea towels and baby poop. I don't know. You know, whatever came into my life, art was always going to be a part of that.
Talk about your work, the imagery in your work and how you work. There's obviously a big part of the work that you do comes out of cultural background, your family background. It has roots in church and religion. And maybe talk about that.
Yeah, well, my work didn't start that way. I mean, obviously, you know, when I was growing up, people of color didn't really go to, at least in my community, didn't really go to art galleries, etc. I mean, I went to an art gallery when I was in public school on a school trip, but nobody I know in my family went to the art gallery. I mean, also too, because you have to think of the times when I was growing up. My parents were married in 1951. I was born in 1952. Art galleries were pretty much white spaces. You know, I mean, you're talking about, in Canada, sort of unofficial, but just as definite system of segregation existed in Canada as existed anywhere else. I mean, definitely, I know going downtown with my grandmother, being with my father's family, there were spaces you didn't go into, and there were spaces you went into.
Mm-hmm.
So the art gallery wasn't one of those spaces.
Right.
So I as I said, was always creative, so it was kind of gleaning stuff from the community around me. Lived with my great-grandmother and my grandmother until I was almost 5, because my parents both worked. And, you know, so I was exposed to, because there were black women from the southern United States, and so were a lot of people in our community, I was exposed to that aesthetic and that culture, and that has very much to do with where my work comes from today. So when I actually did start learning about the larger art world was magazines and dentist offices, libraries, and starting to look at art books when I was old enough to go to libraries, etc., etc. So there we have it.
Do you remember the first friend or influence, person of color that was in your life that you could connect through art with?
Well, just a lot of the people that were my family members at our church. Well, and one of the things you have to remember about black churches is they weren't just churches. They were community centers. They were the only spaces where Black people could come together and feel relaxed. But say, for instance, my grandmother's family moved to Canada from the United States near the turn of the century, and my grandmother, although she did go to school for a little while in Hamilton, was made to feel so uncomfortable, she said, that she actually went to the after-hours stuff that was always happening at the church for kids, and that's where she learned to write. That's where she learned to do a lot of things. So it was like a school, a community center, a social center, blah, 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 and a church.
Amazing.
And that's, like, where, and that's where I was exposed to a lot of the first art, quilting, you know, all of the things that around the church and the people in the community. I mean, there were people that were accepting me. My father and my uncles and aunts were all in the church choir. And my uncle worked in Royal African Methodist Episcopal Church for almost 50 years until he passed away. And yeah, so pretty much people in the community that did creative things, especially of the women that did the quilting. Right now I'm actually working on some textile pieces that are sort of inspired by quilting, but I don't quilt. You know, yeah, so that is basically the Black church from my community, really.
So just to clarify, the church, we're talking about the Stewart Memorial Church.
Memorial AME in Hamilton, Ontario.
And it's interesting, that church, just as an aside, because Guelph has a BME church, which is now the Black Heritage Society's base, their hall.
Uh-huh.
It's a BME church, so we could have a whole conversation about the history of the BME, AME to BME churches, but that church is still active, correct? It's on John Street in the downtown.
Stewart Memorial AME is still active as a church. And at a certain point, you know, the communities also had to find ways to preserve those buildings that were in danger of just being torn down or disappearing or whatever, you know, for various reasons.
So yeah, so let's, coming back to the art, like we worked together back in the 90s on an exhibition that happened at the McMaster Museum of Art in Hamilton. So I just want to talk about the process of how you were working at that time and what was informing it. You were making objects, you were making these constructions, wood, painted, using a mix of like found objects, working with a lot with text where you would spell things out with Scrabble pieces, crosses, also bowls, and then creating sometimes individual works, sometimes clusters of works. So I wonder if you can talk a bit about that process, the materials, what, like how you headed in that direction of making work. Because it is a kind of quilting I always thought about.
Well, I guess, you know, really when I started to really become an artist, like really consciously, I had moved to Vancouver in the early 80s. And Vancouver, of course, at that time, there was just about to be a renaissance of art and music. I mean, it was a great city to live in. It was really affordable, so there were tons of artists and musicians. There was an incredible live scene here, and it really was my art school, my real art school. So, I mean, I just got involved in doing a lot of happenings and I was involved with a lot of musicians that worked here, yada, yada. But then, at a certain point, I just sat myself down and I said to myself, okay, you know, really, what do you want to do? What do you really want to say? And then it always just seemed to come back to my community, my original community, and where I was really originally inspired to make work, and working within the church and outside of the church and being inspired by that whole community that sort of raised me up in Hamilton from a young girl and through very difficult times. I mean, when I started going to school in Hamilton, I went to kindergarten, and then when I was in grade one, the school called my mother and they said, you know, we want to put your daughter in a special education class. Mm-hmm. And that was because every child of color in the school was in special education class,
right?
Which meant that I wouldn't have been able to go to an arts high school. I would have had to go to an industrial school and learn how to become a maid or a cook or something like that. You know, that would have been my only option. But my mother said, no, she doesn't need to be in special education class. She just needs to be in school. So it was very, very difficult, but I just was a regular member of the body of the school. And I have to say, OCAD was no easy thing either at the time. But, I mean, this is the thing. I kind of grew up going through experiences of segregation and experiences of social change. I mean, I was a child of color at a time when there was great social upheaval happening, so I couldn't help but be involved in it. It didn't matter whether I wanted to be involved or not. Right. There I was. I was faced with all these social things constantly. And I guess when I really started to think about it, I thought, okay, well, that's who I am, and that's where I think I have to go to start to figure out, you know, what my work is going to be about. I am a person of color. I did grow up with in these circumstances and with these experiences, and so that's how I started doing, well, the epiphany piece, which is a questioning, you know, a great questioning, and I think that's really what all religions are about. Really, I think about organized religions now, and I think it's all the same thing. It's the same energy wearing 1,000 masks, you know? So that was the masks that my energy embraced, and so I really did start researching and questioning not only my experience of religion, but what was the political and societal function of religion and art and politics. And so there you go, that you have a piece like Epiphany, and then starting to do the work on the urban altars and, well, you know, Scrabble pieces, because it's all about games and politics is a game. And, you know, so that is kind of like how I started working. But here in Vancouver, I also hooked up with a whole group of artists of color led by, like, Paul Wong and Dan Claxton, etc., and we formed a group called the Mingquan Panchayat, which was a group of all kinds of artists of color from all kinds of cultures that were really having a problem with the established art world and even getting our work shown in the established art world. So we were feeling quite invisible, and so we just kind of got together and started figuring out how we could get our work out there and how we could bring a voice to this dilemma. And that's how my work that I did when I was with you, that political work, that's how that started.
And if I recall, I do recall, there were other, beyond just your family background with African Methodist Church, and there was also an interest of yours in other faiths and religions, and particularly Caribbean faiths, that's correct, right?
Well, I mean, basically, when I started the Great Questioning, you know, I became interested in religions that formed within African slave culture, basically, because it brought, usually, you know, I mean, Christianity is strange things. Christians enslaved people, you know, and then they brought them to this place, to this new world, and now Africans already had their own religion. I mean, when you start looking at a religions from Africa, like Voodoo, Voodoo, which is now Candomblé, and etc., that came to the new world, these were religions that were formed by people who already had spiritual practices. I mean, Voodoo is basically means looking into the mystery. Mm-hmm. I mean, how much more Catholic can you get than that? So if you go to some place like Haiti, for instance, they'll say, you know, 98% Catholic, 100% Voodoo. It's because basically you're kind of looking at people that came to a new place. I mean, the cross basically already existed in African spiritual culture. So, you know, basically they came, there was a cross. Okay, we're being forced to do this, but in our hearts and in our minds, we will look through these symbols. We're being forced to worship these new symbols, and we will still retain our own spiritual practice, our own sense of who we are. So I became really interested in the religion I grew up with. And I grew up, I have to say, I don't know if I could say I'm a card-carrying member of the Christian faith these days. I don't know, you know. It's a big question. But I grew up with an incredibly positive experience of that faith. Right. In that little church in Hamilton, Ontario, and possibly it's because, you know, there were people that were thrown together under really sometimes horrific circumstances that came together and were very loving and kind and generous, and those are the people I grew up with. But I mean, I also look at religion happening out in the world right now, Christianity, and there's a lot of greed, there's a lot of homophobia, there's a lot of, but that happens in all religions. Sexism, that happens in all religions. Yeah. Buddhism, you know, any religion you want to name, that kind of stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's really interesting that, you know, you highlighted that the church was this place of like community connection. It housed so many different elements that it wasn't solely the focus of like an organized spiritual focus for you. And I think, you know,
and I don't think for many. I mean, you know, if you grow up in a situation where you're forced to become something.
Yeah.
And here's your little building that you've got, and it's,
yeah.
You know, I think about my ancestors that were in the southern United States as slaves, and then after the Civil War happened, black churches were the only places black people could, and as we know,
organized.
Not always even safely exist in together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. I wonder if you could talk about like the relationship, because you're speaking too about like your family was American, right?
My father's family.
Oh, your father's family.
Sorry. Although my mother's family also were immigrants, English, German, Irish, French, and Scottish, mm-hmm. and they also came from Europe to America, but then came up through to Canada.
Okay. So, yeah, I wonder if, do you feel like in terms of growing up around the church, could you discern a difference in terms of an American, like an African-American influence versus it feeling rooted in a Canadian kind of lived experience? Like, do you feel like the people you were growing up with, the culture you were growing up with was, like, distinctly American or...
Well, I think, you know, when I was young and I was really involved with the church, most of my family members, well, my grandmother and my great-grandmother were born in Danville, Virginia, mm-hmm. and I think a large part of the black Canadian population then were African-American. There wasn't, as now, there is a huge Caribbean population
mm-hmm.
in Toronto, in Ontario, in Canada in general,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't really exist until, like, even the 70s or 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew maybe two or three families in Hamilton whose families came from Jamaica or someplace in the Caribbean. Otherwise, it was pretty much in that church, descendants of African Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm always interested or kind of fascinated in the fact that...
Because it's the waves of, you know...
Yeah, waves of immigration.
That come.
But also, too, that a part of that is that we kind of have this way of not actually being able to identify a black Canadian experience. Like, that we all feel like we're so removed or, like, separated from actually being able to anchor to one kind of, you know, not that there's a one specific, like, identity of black existence, but I feel like as Canadians, so many of us feel kind of a certain sense of disconnect because we're, you know...
Well, because we're growing up in a country that basically doesn't acknowledge our history or our existence.
Yes.
I mean, it's basically white culture is still pretty much predominantly the culture that is acknowledged as mm-hmm. Canadian.
Yeah.
I mean, it predominates everything.
Yeah.
In our education, like we're totally, I look at what's happening in America and Canada today and UK, these countries where there is huge immigrant populations, but, you know, I mean, I remember when I was going to public school, we still, you know, were saluting the Union Jack and singing God Save the Queen, but, I mean, it's a culture that has been predominated by a Eurocentric way of looking at things and not acknowledging all the other people that have come here to make up this country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. So we're all walking around like completely miseducated. We have been miseducated into this whole mess that is happening right now.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump is just, you know, the great miseducator of all times.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like, for me, the project, when we worked together back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
one of the things, you know, talking about this sort of miseducation, while I had grown up and gone to school and gone to high school, and many of my friends had come, as you were mentioning, the 70s, had come from Jamaica, and I had no sense, in the same sense that when I was younger, I had no idea that there were Indigenous people living around Hamilton at Six Nations till I went to a hockey tournament.
Oh, I was very aware of that.
Yeah, but with the history of the Black community in Hamilton, it was something that I really learned about through you and through the through that church, through the history of that church and the history of that community.
And yet, funnily enough, there have been Black people in Hamilton since before Canada was Canada.
Exactly, yeah. There's all these great records of when the Irish show up in southwestern Ontario and they're writing home, because you know, it's not just they're encountering Indigenous people, they're meeting Black people, and where did these people come from? Mm-hmm. So that whole history, yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of my father's family, and the Indigenous people, we did not immigrate. They did not immigrate here.
Yeah.
The Indigenous people were here, and a lot of the Black people, especially American Black people, didn't immigrate. They were brought over in slave ships.
I was about to say, the next person we're going to talk to, Dr. Charmaine Nelson, who's normally based at McGill, but is now doing a year at Harvard, and all of her work, a lot of her work is based around the history of slavery in Canada, so the deeper history, not the story of the Underground Railroad, but slavery as something that was practiced and existed in Toronto, in southern Ontario, in Quebec.
Well, that's right. It is part of the Great Denial.
So you lived in Cuba, Haiti, and the UK before.
Oh, I worked there.
Oh, you worked there. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I usually went. I actually did a project through Locust Plus in the United Kingdom and built an altar in memory of the people that the slaves that had died during the Middle Passage, in a space that had been built in 1776 and was actually the place where the last slave ship had been sent from the United Kingdom to do the whole round, actually to Africa, pick up the slaves to the Caribbean, to dump them off and pick up rum to Virginia, to dump off some rum and pick up some tobacco. Virginia is where my father's family is from, and then back to the UK. And then slavery was abolished in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And then I went to Haiti to do a show at the National Gallery of Port-au-Prince and arrived on the day that Jean-Dominique was assassinated.
Jean-Dominique.
Yeah, so martial law was declared in Haiti that day, and I was so upset because I had so wanted to meet Jean-Dominique. I was, just found him and his wife Michelle just such inspiring people, and such incredible people. And Haiti, one of the most incredibly creative places I think I've ever been in my life. And I found the people, you know, quite wonderful. So, and then, you know, so these are places. Cuba, I went to do a bit of a research trip. I was, well, because Santeria exists in Cuba. So I wanted to research Santeria. It's my quest of researching spiritual practice in slave cultures.
You were talking about work, these pieces, and working in the 90s, and like, where are you now with art practice?
Well, I'm still doing a lot of the same kind of work.
Right.
Like, I will always probably make crosses, because as we know, the Epiphany piece has always got to have new elements. Every time I display the Epiphany piece or show the Epiphany piece, which is all the crosses, there have to be new crosses in it, otherwise it won't be an epiphany.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And I am actually working on a whole series of the memory jugs, which is, I just made my first memory jug for the Granville Island Cultural Society. I worked with a lovely woman here named Barbara Chirinos and Ali De La Mora. They actually had a Day of the Dead festival happening on Granville Island, and so they were asking people from other cultures to partake in this festival of the Day of the Dead, and so I made my first memory jug in honor of Black Lives Matter. So I'm actually now making a whole series of the memory jugs, which is a Southern Black funereal art tradition. So there we have it, and I'm actually working with a European curator, I hope, keeping my fingers crossed this year, named Cornelia Loss, and I am working on some textile pieces that kind of stem from the whole tradition of Black quilting, also acknowledging, you know, the work of women and the work of women by their hand, and also the incredible traditions in Africa of textile making that are now fast disappearing because mm-hmm. of all the cheap textiles from China. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to get over there and learn how to make all these
weavings,
things before it all disappears or save it. You know, because, oh my God, I just think, well, you know, I, of course, the ladies from G's Bend, Alabama, who I actually have done a couple of workshops mm-hmm. with here, and their work, I mean, it's just amazing. This work can't disappear, you know. The work of the great textile makers from mm-hmm. the Congo and Ghana mm-hmm. and all over Africa, it can't disappear. Mm-hmm. So I'm working on the textile pieces right now. And the funereal memory jugs, so.
So it was nice, again, to hear you talk about Epiphany, because Epiphany is a piece that we would love to have come to Guelph, and partly because it would just be great to have it come to Guelph, but also because of the church, because of the BME church that's there.
Well, so it'd be great. It would be great to have it come anywhere, because, you know,
it's such amazing work.
It actually went to the first International Art Biennale in Johannesburg, in mm-hmm. South Africa, where I met Nelson Mandela, you know, so just after he had been elected. So, it was really, really interesting to see what was kind of happening with Christianity in Africa, and so mm-hmm. to have the Epiphany piece there was great.
So the last thing, I have this really wonderful, vivid memory of living in Vancouver and coming to Vancouver and visiting you at the house you used to be in, which was the old bakery.
Oh, my house, my
house. Yeah, and I was saying to Liz, it wasn't just like your house or like you had a studio. I mean, the house itself.
It was like an installation.
It was, yeah. It was like really like walking into the Epiphany. And I'm just curious, do you have photographs of the house? Or?
I have maybe a couple of pictures of the house, you know, of course. It's the first, actually, my parents were like gypsies, so we didn't live in one place very long. So that house was the longest I have ever lived in one place in my life. So it did kind of just become an extension of my whatever.
Yeah.
So, of me.
Yeah, and is the house
gone?
It was
me as a house.
Yeah. I mean, I know you don't live there anymore, but is the house itself gone?
No, it's not gone. It's lived in by a lovely family who, by the way, it was a very old house, so it did need some TLC. It did need some tender mm-hmm. loving care. So there is a lovely family living in there right now, but, you know, at this point, I'm kind of feeling like I need another space like that. You know what I'm saying? As an artist, I need another place, because I'm a woman. I need to live where I work. I can't see mm-hmm. myself getting up in the middle of the night and being all inspired and trudging halfway across town to some lonely, isolated space, you know?
Yeah. And especially in Vancouver, I imagine, too.
That's right. It's like I have to live and work in the same space. Yeah. That's my process. That's me, so.
We could continue on forever. I'm so interested in what it's like being a woman of color in Vancouver. I think that would be kind of interesting if we could maybe wrap
on. Well, being
that.
A woman of color anywhere is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can say their life is interesting, you know, but you can only kind of look at it through your own mm-hmm. experience. And I mean, it's quite interesting how things have changed in mm-hmm. some ways, and then how things have really remained the same in many ways.
Yeah.
So I think we're going through a time of great social upheaval, but, you know, I hope some positive change comes out of it all.